Okay. Buckle your seatbelt. The scripture says in Exodus 25, this is the beginning. This is where we get the name of the Torah portion reading. Adonai spoke to Moses, Vayidaber Adonai el Moshe lemor, saying, that's in Hebrew, Vayidaber Adonai el Moshe lemor. Tell Bnei Israel to take up an offering. That's how it's translated. But the word here is to receive, in Hebrew, a terumah. Receive a terumah. And this is the unique word, and that's the portion is named after this, terumah. So we'll find out what that word means in just a minute. It's translated in the Complete Jewish Bible and in the TLV as to take up an offering, which is kind of normal, take up an offering. But it's actually, in Hebrew, it could be translated receive an offering. Have you heard many people use that terminology? To receive an offering, a terumah, for me. Whoa. Receive an offering for me. Well, like, really need, not, I mean, he's got the, owned the cattle of a thousand hills and all that stuff, and he needs our stuff, right? Now, here's the conclusion of this verse 2. From anyone whose heart compels him. I got a place to go, so I better not. Compels him, you are to take my offering. And again, the word used there in the Hebrew is terumah. It's not just an imposition. It's the Lord saying, I want to receive an offering, and you are to take it from them. Okay, but not from everybody. We're not to force them. You're not to coerce them. You're not to stand up and say you need to redeem your wallet or whatever, all those mechanisms that we men use to try to get the people to give some money. The Lord doesn't need it. In fact, he doesn't want it that way. It says very specifically here, from anyone whose heart compels him. In other words, it starts in the heart of the person is speaking, begins to speak. In Jewish world, the heart is over here, which is where, when you're hungry, comes up, somewhere in that area. Listen, I pay attention to when, right? Don't you? I don't need to put my ear in my belly to hear it. I'm trying to make fun, and because at the same time, I want your attention. So I want you to know I'm not just going to be an orator here and just tell you what the scripture says. I'm going to do a little bit more than that. Seems to me that this sends waves of change to the believing world. When I first became a pastor, and I understood that things were from the Bible, I've shared that with you. Well, how do you take up an offering? Well, then somebody said, well, no, it's receive. Okay. They're both here, by the way. Take up and receive. How you do it? I don't know. It's the way we've always done it. So I went and tried to find out. Come to find out that the Lord doesn't want any coercion. Come to find out the Lord doesn't want me as a... When I was a pastor in Gadsden, Alabama, Yes, I lived in Alabama. And I survived. And I didn't become a Obama fan. Okay, so I had to understand for me, what is it that you want and how is this supposed to come? I shared that with all the other ministers in 1982. So I shared it with all of the ministers in the denomination I was part of. You know what they said? You ain't going to get nothing if you do it that way. So, the problem is that if there was nothing to pay the light bill, and there was nothing to buy toilet paper, so at some point, we didn't receive anything by saying voluntarily, if you feel like it. Well, that's a license for most people don't feel like giving an offering. I'm not saying because it's Alabama, because it's just as many tacaños in Florida as there is tacaños in Alabama. And that word tacaño means that it's all over the place. So what am I going to do? We discussed these kinds of things. Driving back from Gadsden to Auburn, 3.5 hours at night. Get home at 2 a.m. on Saturdays. Sundays, that is. And there would be the bills. What am I going to tell the chief bishop? Send me over here. And they were already broke, but now I made him even more broke. Etc. I'm not just telling you. I'm telling you real stuff. Like the real stuff that you have to also do. Are you going to just stand before the Lord and, well, they said that I need to give this. Well, have you ever wondered and asked the Lord? Some people say, well, ask the Lord. You're going to be broke for sure then. That's what they said. You're going to be broke for sure if you ask the Lord. Somehow, we got a painting. We have a picture of him that is not the accurate picture. And furthermore, we see him in an isolated, sometimes in a room. If the Lord is in the room, he's close your eyes. Okay, close my eyes. Well, where is he? All I see is gray. Well, that's where he show up. He'll talk to you then. I came to preach. The Torah portion today, the reading for today in Exodus 25 begins by asking for a terumah. It's translated from here, okay, in voluntary offering from compelling hearts. Right? All right, let's go. Let's find out. Those offerings from among 13 raw materials, because the next two verses talk about, yes, I counted it, 13 different things that they could bring for the offering. They were collected and they were used to do what? To build the Mishkan, the tabernacle, to build the house of God in the wilderness. Are you kidding me? Think for a moment. If you're going to use your tithe to build God a house, how stingy are we going to be? I'm not going to let up much, okay? So enjoy it. Every once in a while, you get a chance to breathe and say, okay, I got it. Then he said, he's not through then. Then he said, oh, by the way, I have this on a transparency. Right after the message. Yeah, there you go. The blue is what the Torah says. Okay? So that you know who's talking here. The blue says, right there in the middle of that first paragraph there, have them make a sanctuary for me so that I may dwell among them. Exodus 25:8. Well, let me say in another way. Not that he needs help. Just, in other words, he said, make me a sanctuary. But what you don't catch is so that I may dwell among them. He's not dwelling someplace else. He's going to dwell in the midst of the people. He's going to be right there. And he wants us to go to help. Like he really needs our help. Right? Or you go, well, yeah, there's nothing in the desert. So he said to the children of Israel, on the 15th day of the first month, go ask your neighbors before you leave. And they were so anxious to get him out of Egypt that they gave them jewels and they gave him gold and they gave him all kinds of stuff. Just get out of Dodge. Or we're all going to die. That's how they were feeling after the death of the firstborn. So they gave him the stuff. We'd rather have life. You take the stuff. You know, is that stuff going to help you a lot in the middle of the Sahara Desert? And you're like, really? Like, you can just go ahead and put the earrings on and gold. It's like, man, that's what I need. Custom jewelry in the desert. What I need in the desert is water, number one. And I need food. And I need shelter. And I need shade. And the desert tends to get cold at night. And there ain't nothing to keep that wind from going on you. So you need something to keep that wind out of the way. You need a heater. Listen, you need a heater to go with you. So the Lord needs to empower a helicopter thing with heaters to go around. And then since if there's new moon, when new moon comes, there is no light at night. It's dark, like totally dark. So you need a way to have lampposts in the desert. Way more than you need onyx or acacia wood or any of that stuff. So it's not like he's asking for the stuff that is really necessary to live in the desert. He's asking for the stuff. We have stuff. Yes, when my wife puts on the earrings and, you know, comes out of the house looking like $1 million, now I can just walk around going, that's mine, you know, kind of thing. That's what guys do. That's my baby and so on. Okay? On the other hand, when I'm ready to go and she's over there having a hair day, that's what I'm told. It's a hair day. I don't know because I get out of that place as soon as I can. As soon as I get up and get a bath and get dressed, I am out of there because that's not a place for me. I will lose my temper. I will do all kinds of evil things. I will say stuff that will cut me out from a great dinner. And I'm listening to my stomach and so on, okay? So for my own good, I get out of Dodge. In my case, I go to my office. If I think that it's time to go, I used to go in the car. Don't do it. Don't go in the car and turn it on and wait. Because it will not work. You will need to confess your sins before you walk that door in Shabbat. Because you're going to lose it. Oh no, I sit down on a chair to watch the grand entrance. When here comes Honeydew, and he's going to come down the stairs. I'm telling you, you need to take video. Because she comes out, and I learned 45 years ago that she expects me to give some kind of comment. Like, yeah, or no, or I'm hungry, or let's go. So what are the comments that are typical for us husbands? You know, it's 8:15 now. We're really going to be late. You know, we got all these other comments. Was that what you were looking for? What was she looking for? You know, I asked, why do you want to look good for everybody? None of their business. She looked at me and said, I'm not doing it for everybody. I'm doing it for you. And they're like, bam! Okay, if all these wives here that disagree, stand up and say so. And my information is limited. I only have one wife. Okay. In my view, the Torah is really clear here. The offerings are to come only from those who are motivated and moved in their hearts to donate. It happens that way for her. If I just pull out the script, open the phone, and put it on the script, these are the things you need to say to your wife when she comes down the stairs, when she just got dressed. And just repeat it. If the next week you use the same words, that woman is going to be upset. She said, why? You think you need to, you might as well record it and press the button. Right? I've learned something, even though I don't understand you guys, ladies. I don't understand you, but I've learned something. Don't use the same. And don't think that you can just do a random loop and, you know, use the same random words from the same list, because they're smart. They have four CPUs, and they're going to be checking that out. And they're going to come in and say, well, that's the same thing you said 3 weeks ago. And that's the same thing you said 3 days ago. Similar, but you just changed the word. And you go like, since when do you remember stuff like that? You always say you don't remember nothing. Oh, but she remembers these things really, really well. True? So what's this word terumah? Guess what? It doesn't have an English counterpart. What? This word doesn't actually have an English counterpart. So that gave the rabbis opportunity to give their opinion. So let me give you one of the most illustrious commentary, Jewish commentators, Rashi. What's what he thinks? This is what he thinks. Quote, terumah implies the separation of a portion of one's own resources designated for a higher purpose. Your own resources are going to be used for a much higher purpose. The house of God. How about that? The raw materials were needed to build Adonai's tabernacle. What allowed these raw materials to come together for sacred use? What was it? Do you make something sacred out of just, oh, well, in my barn I had this, and in my, that's essentially what we're saying. What do you got in your house? Well, I got some acacia wood. Okay, bring that. And what else you got? Well, I got some onyx, and somebody gave me some perfume, and somebody gave me some myrrh, and somebody gave me, you know, all of that stuff the Lord's going to use. And in fact, he knows what it is. And he knows that you got it. And it's in the shed, in the back, somewhere. In my case, it's in the closet. It says our closet, but in reality, it's not our closet. It's her closet, and I pay dues to have about a third of it, about, you know, 20%. That's, you know, and I pay dues for that. That's not free. Okay? So what was it? The intention. This is what he said. The intention behind the offering is what made the difference. And the Lord said that. Beyond the command to give, these offerings were to be a gift to Adonai. You can actually give him a gift. Given out of a desire to help build Adonai's sanctuary. And then to invite his presence to dwell in the space that was created. Without the emotions of the heart, that sacred space could not be built. So, the sofrito, the salt and pepper, the spices that made this acceptable was the heart of the individual. I think this is awesome. This is awesome. Because without that, all it had been is been a dwelling place. You're like, really? I was looking for the Hilton and you built me a Motel 6. And what made the difference between Motel 6 and the Hilton? Or Motel 6 and the Marriott? Or Motel 6 and the Hyatt? In the wilderness. People like John Davis, and people like Sam, and people like others here. People like Rebecca. You know, don't we know Rebecca? You and I know. We know. So Adonai's tabernacle was made by those who were willing to give of themselves along with their stuff. How about that? And it is from this giving that Adonai could ultimately dwell in the sanctuary that was created by the people at his command. And he did. You can read about it later in the Torah. Then in verse 9 of chapter 25, he says, you are to make it all precisely according to everything that I show you. The pattern of the tabernacle and the pattern of all the furnishes within. Just so you must make it. See, verse 40, that you make them according to their pattern shown to you on the mountain. This becomes the key verse for today. See, come on, see. You can read it up there, I think. Maybe it's in the next page. See that you make them according to their pattern. See that you make them according to their pattern that is shown to you on the mountain. Why do you suppose Adonai was so meticulous about this? Why was he so, you know, like, about the tabernacle, the Mishkan in the wilderness? Look, he didn't leave it to the imagination of the builder. Or the imagination of the architect. Or the imagination of the ladies. Because if the architects were men. But ladies can be architects. And they bring out something that male architects don't bring. It was not left to the artists. They're artists here. But they're not asking the artists. Come on, draw the thing. Draw the picture of what it is that's going to go there. Please note that it was not left to them. But instead, he gives this instruction. You make them according to the pattern being shown to you on the mountain. And he repeats this multiple times in this parashat and the next one to come. This is repeated. This, you know, the Torah says it one, pay attention. Says it's two, oh boy. This is three, you better do it. Says it's four, don't ask. And he said at least four times. This is what happens. This is the picture that I want you to catch. These things are destined to be significant to the children of Israel and also to the future people of the kingdom of heaven. I'm not leaving you out here. I just took you. I just gave you a reason to pay attention. These things are supposed to become significant to the children of Israel and to the future people of the kingdom forever. Forever. Say the word with me, forever. You're not going to like it when the Holy Spirit starts reminding you what you just answered to. Take it up with him. He's big enough to wrestle and win. Okay. For most of Jewish history, uncertainty in antiquity, turns out the preeminent symbol of the children of Israel was the menorah. One of those instruments there. Okay. This is the seven branch. There's a picture. You see the picture? This is a picture of drawn to it's a photo scale of the menorah that is in the, that picture is in the museum in Israel. It's a seven branches. Count them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. It doesn't have nine. That's something else. It was first revealed to Moses in this parashat. It was first seen in the Mishkan that they're building. But later on, it has a prominent place in Solomon's temple. In fact, there were special priests who got the privilege on a daily basis to go trim the menorah. Meaning, by trim doesn't mean get a thing and cut it out. It just means to put new oil in it and clean out the stuff and make it bright again for 24 hours. And those people, they got to go into the holy place, which is where this was. Then over there was the most holy place. And they learned that you just don't go there. Not unless you want an encounter that's going to left you vaporized. I want you to look at the scripture. Follow along as I read. Verse 31 of chapter 25. You are to make a menorah of pure gold by hammered work. Its base, stem, cups, bulbs, and flowers. The cups, bulbs, and flowers are called an op and a bowl and a flower in the King James Version. Nop, bowl, and flower in the King James Version. The nop is a bowl. Are to be one piece. In other words, there's no welding. Stephen knows how to weld. Pretty good. I mean, he welded his car together, and so far it's tying together. So, but the Lord didn't want the marks that welders make when they put things together, right? Please note that this is to be made of one piece of gold. That means that it's melted together, cleansed, and made into a gigantic piece. And then from that, it was made. How about that? Just imagine what that was like. There are to be three cups shaped like almond blossoms in one branch, each with a bulb and a flower. Then three cups made like almond blossoms in the next branch, each with a bulb and a flower. So there's three on each of the six, right? Bowl, knob, and flower, bowl, knob, and flower, bowl, knob, and flower in each of the branches. There's six of those, okay? And so forth for the six branches coming out of the menorah. Within the menorah, there will be four cups made like almond blossoms with bulbs and flowers. So within the menorah, in the middle, that's what within means in the middle, literally. In the middle, there's a branch. It's not bended, it's straight. And it has a ball and up and a flower four times. That's 12. So 6 times 9 and 12 adds up to 66. Coincidence. You got to be kidding me. But you go, I thought that was the number of the beast. Was it actually the number of books in the Bible? 66. Let's keep reading here. There's to be above on the two branches of the first piece, above on the two branches of the second piece, and above on the two branches of the third piece. For the 6 branches coming out of the menorah. How many more? 6. 6 plus 66 makes 72. Random. Just put that in your back pocket. The menorah has 72 adornments. Their bulbs and their branches are to be one piece, all coming out of the menorah. Their bulbs and their branches are to be made of a single hammered work of pure gold. You're also to make how many lamps? 7. 7 lamps. 7? What? 72 adornments. What? What about the base? Look at the base. You can't see the back, but can you count how many are in the bottom? You see 3, right? That means in behind that, you're going to see how many? Okay. How many do you see in the second level? 3. That means that behind it, there's going to be, that adds up to 12. The foundation is 12. You are to make the 7 lamps for it and set the lamps up to shed light over the space before it. So, I'm getting ready to get excited now. You think I've been excited? I'm getting excited. Well, what is this about the top of the menorah? There's 7 lights. They represent the 7 spirits of God. What? God has 7 spirits? It's in Revelation 1:4. It's in Revelation 3:1. It's in Revelation 4:5 and Revelation 5:6. Okay? But that's not the only place it is. It's in Zechariah. It's in Ezekiel. It's in other places. Let me quote Zechariah for you. For those who despise the day of small things, these 7, which are the eyes of Adonai that run back and forth throughout the whole earth, will rejoice when they see the plumb line in Zerubbabel's hand. Zechariah 4:10. What was Zechariah looking at in chapter 4? A menorah. There were 2 olive trees. And a branch from the olive tree went to the center. And another branch from the olive tree went to the other center. Oh boy, if I had another hour, I could preach. But I don't. Just Zechariah. Therefore, this 7 is significant. When you look at those 7, what are you supposed to be reacting to? The 7 spirits of God. Not just a random candelabra. This is the problem. Yeshua shows up in the island of Patmos to John the Revelator. And it was on the day of the Lord. And then somebody said, that was Sunday. Okay, go ahead. That wasn't the day of the Lord. But any case, shows up and the writer says, there were 7 menorahs.
But I didn't know what a menorah was. When I got saved, I just thought of there were seven candelabra. I had no idea how many lights were in it. At least two, you'd hope. So I dismissed that. That's irrelevant. That doesn't tell me anything. Just, okay, so he likes candlelight. He must like Marilyn. She loves candlelight. Everything got to be with candlelight. I had to grow into liking this thing. I really had to learn to grow to like ambience. She says, ambience, Tony. And I'm like, yes, you don't understand that. I was in the army and, you know, olive drab and all. We had a flashlight. We didn't use candles. Okay. We just went through a time when the people celebrate love and all those things. Now, let's look at another thing. When people build a house, are there any builders here? Actually, there have been builders, and their builders are a part of this congregation. Sam doesn't build houses, but he has to talk about buildings. When a building is to be put down, what's the first thing that gets done? The foundation. Okay, in terms of builders, that's the first draw. The first draw is what you get when you pour the concrete on the ground. When the bank sees the concrete on the ground, they release 10% of the amount of money that that contract is for, which pays for the concrete and everything else, pays the bills, and there's a little bit of profit there. But the builder has to put that on his own. Foundation. But you want to hear some stuff? Wisdom has built her house. She has carved out her seven pillars. What does that mean? That means that there are seven pillars holding up the house of wisdom. Ah, Proverbs 9:1. What is the foundation of Adonai's house? What is the foundation of Adonai's house of wisdom? Answer. Go ahead. Oh no, that's in the New Testament. Well, how about in the book of Proverbs? What's the foundation? Okay. I needed to put a $25,000 thing on somebody who got it right. Maybe you'll do some reading. The fear of Adonai is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. What's the foundation? The fear of the Lord and the knowledge of the Holy One. That's what supports the superstructure of the house of wisdom. It has seven mighty pillars. Seven? All of this is random. So when you leave, you go on a bunch of random stuff. Guess what? Think of it on a moment. Supporting Adonai's house of wisdom. Come to the previous slide to see the menorah. The house of wisdom is riding on top of that menorah. In other words, it's giving light up to the house of wisdom of Adonai. I'm going to go a little further. Oh, yay. Now you can go to the next page. Thank you. So, capitulating. By the way, you can get a copy of this. It's posted on the website. Kolsimcha.org. With color and everything. So if you print it in a color printer, it'll just look just like this. Hang on a second. Before I continue, and this is set up for 45 minutes, and I'm going to blow it, but not as much as you think. A voluntary offering, an offering from those who are motivated and moving their hearts to give something tangible becomes a lifelong pattern. Let me say that again. A voluntary offering, an offering from those who are motivated and moved in their hearts to give, becomes a tangible life pattern. Let me prove it to you. When Israel encamped in the desert, Adonai commanded Moses to set up a camp pattern in which they rested and how they were to move. This pattern was Amelisa's first teaching after she was bat mitzvah. And she gave it on a Saturday on the first reading of the book of Numbers. And she stood up there. We were in 241, I believe. We were in 91st Street. And we had a transparencies, and she went and put that transparency in the wall and then stood there and teach from that. Remember, Ame? She could tell you what all this stuff means. Just ask her. I didn't tell her what I was going to talk about. I have pretty good memory. And I remember that you did an awesome job. And I hope I can do half as good a job as you did that day. Look at the picture. Okay? The east is pointing down. So if we wanted to take the picture and rotate it 90 degrees, it would look like Florida, right? Florida, as you go up, is north or whatever. Now, for a moment, imagine the east is down and not to the right. Okay? To the east. Judah is there. Judah, to the east. Who's with Judah? Issachar and Zebulun. Okay? The banner for the tribe of Judah was a lion of gold. A gold lion. It's not MGM. It's a lion of the tribe of Judah. And it was on a scarlet background. It's in the Bible. Okay? Move over to the west, across. By the way, in the center is the tabernacle. On the west is Ephraim. Ephraim is the second born of Joseph. And with him is Benjamin, which is Joseph's brother from the same mother, and Manasseh. These are related. These are related. They're related to Rachel. Oh. Look, Ephraim is on the west. The banner for Ephraim is an ox, a black ox on a gold background. So, what I'm drawing with the picture there is imagine the flags, like you see the U.S. flags in the outer store. It's going like that. That's the flag that's going for in the west. He said Reuben to the south, the firstborn, with a banner of a man on a gold background. The south, Reuben. Who's with Reuben? Gad and Simeon. See that? And then he said Dan on the north. Dan, not here, but I would have said, that's yours, Dan. Okay, on the north, a banner of an eagle of gold on a blue background. Who's with Dan? Naphtali and Asher. Where is Moses? With Aaron and the priest, they are at the entrance, right? They're at the entrance. And what is around them, the Kohathites and Merarites are the rest of the tribe of Levi, which they don't have a place on the outside. Because notice that Ephraim and Manasseh take up two spaces. One of those spaces belonged to the tribe of Levi. But Levi was tasked to be the priests and all. So that's where they all are. The Gershonites, Kohathites, Gershonites, and Merarites are divisions of the children of Levi. So are Aaron and Moses. But these are the brass. This is how they camped, but this is how they moved. Let me say that again. This is how they camped, but this is how they moved. So if they were moving west, who led? Ephraim. If they were moving east, who led? Judah. If they were moving north, Dan. And if they were moving south, Reuben. That's how they camped. Now, for a moment, this depiction, by the way, so what were the four beasts that Ezekiel saw? He saw four beasts. What were they, the faces of those four beasts? Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Coincidence, of course. Coincidence. All right, what did Isaiah see? He saw same kind of thing. Did he see something different? What did John the Revelator see around the throne? There were four beasts around the throne. What did he see? For goodness sakes, what did he see? They're described for you. And you read them and you go, oh, wow, this is weird. Ain't nothing weird about it. It's depicting the children of Israel. Guess what? Around the throne is built. The children of Israel have like a depiction of the throne of God. This is what the throne of God looks like, according to Revelation. Okay, wait, hang on a second. Look up from above, like what you're looking at now. That's God's view. Right? He's not underneath. He's not, you know, left, right, and up. He's above. What's the depiction? It's that one. What do you see? Want me to tell you? Count. On the edge. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Coincidence. 12 foundations. Each one of them have their own ensign. If you were to blow that menorah or go to Israel and see it, you would see that each of the bases has a symbol and it's not a zodiac. It's not a zodiac. It's the symbol of the tribes of Israel. Marilyn quoted that Paul said that our foundation was apostles. How many apostles there were? That's random. That's random. Why did he pick 12? Why not 11? Why did they have to make sure that they had a 12th man in the Acts of the Apostles? Matthias won that. Why? Do you even think about it? Because you don't want to. Menorah. The base, the foundation, is apostles. And it's the 12 tribes of Israel. How many gates on the city? How many entrances on the gates? How many precious stones on the top of the gate of each city in the book of Revelation? Just tell me. I mean, just guess, say 12. 12 gates. How many stones? Well, go ahead and guess 12. And you say, well, you're off by two. Two times. There's 24. Why 24? Lots of explanations, because they are 12 apostles, and the 12 children of the B'nai Israel are descendants of the 12 tribes, and there's 12 times 12 is 144, and the first 144,000 is from the children of Israel, but then there's another 144,000 in Revelation 14. Those are redeemed from the earth. Redeemed from the earth. Those are not necessarily Jews. Who are they? Redeemed from the earth. Who are they? Come on, stand up and say, it's me. It's me. Unless you're Jewish, you need to stand up and say, it's me. It's me. I'm there. I'm counted there. 144,000. Why 144,000? Because the Jewish side also has 144,000. Duh. And it's 12 times 12. Duh. 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 We see the content of the Mishkan. Look inside up there. You see, what do you see? The table of showbread, the altar of incense, and the menorah. You know, if you blow that up, you can see it. And in the most holy places in the center, back there, that all that's there is the Ark of the Covenant. We see anointed leaders, Moses and Aaron, standing between where? In the center. What's it? What's in the center of the menorah? It's surrounded by 72 bowls, knops, and flowers. Furthermore, let me ask you, how many prophets did Moses put his spirit on? What was the number? 72. 70 in the camp and 2 outside. 72. Random. Random. Coincidence. Do you see the menorah there? Do you see the menorah in the encampment? Not just the one in the center. Do you see the pattern of the foundations? Do you see the pattern of the colors, the pattern of the beast? The all those patterns are, according to the book of Revelation, is the depiction of what's around the throne of God. So guess why did he want them to create that exactly like he showed them on the mount? He showed them the throne of God. Moses saw it. And then the Lord said, build it exactly, not 1 inch less, exactly to the pattern you saw. Why? Because that pattern is speaking to you. Do you now understand what it says? You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill that can't be hidden. But what does a man do? He takes a candle and puts it on a candlestick. Read the TLV. Put it on a menorah. The individual candles go on a menorah. The menorah is what gives the light. It's not about individuals. Ooh, could I preach about that? This is a life pattern. This is a life pattern. This pattern appears in the life of Yeshua all the time. And until I came to this revelation, I had no clue. I thought it was all staging. All right, fine. Let's look at the life pattern. When Yeshua becomes visible, you know, Yeshua ascended into heaven, right? And according to the Bible, what is he doing? Sitting at the right hand of the Father. Well, he took a break. Yeah, man, come on, preach it, Rabbi. He took a break. And he shows up to John. That's the only time that Yeshua is recorded for us that he appears. And it's him, no doubt. He appears in the book of Revelation. What is he surrounded by? His Father divinely, in his sovereignty, chose the staging. What was the staging? 7 menorahs. Read chapter 1. Read it again. Read it again. Read it again. Read it again. This was not random, my friend. Yeshua said this was a mysterion. Greek for mystery. Here's the mystery Yeshua revealed to John immediately in chapter 1. What is the mystery of the 7 menorot with you in the middle of them? The 7 menorot are the 7 messianic communities. i.e., what's called the seven churches. It's what it says. Yeshua, the seven places that were prominent at this time in the world, were not called churches. They were messianic communities. And Yeshua said each one was a menorah. What does that mean? It means we are a menorah. We are a menorah. We are a menorah. We are a menorah. In a menorah community, we see clearly him. He's not hidden. Look, there's seven churches. Call it churches, call it messianic communities, call it ecclesia, which is the word in the Greek, which is a direct translation according to the LXX, which was a translation of Greek, of Hebrew to Greek. The word used for kahal is ecclesia. Ecclesia means kahal, and kahal means ecclesia. What are we called? Kehilat. Where does that word come from? From kahal. What does the word kahal mean? Assembly. The assembly. It also means synagogue. Listen, you can go ahead and check all this out. I don't have time. I don't have time to tell you everything, to give you all the history of everything like that. Just tell you what it is. Go check it out. I don't expect you to take my word. Go check it out. In the wilderness, there were 70 and two prophets. What's that number? 72. What's the number of pretty things in the menorah? 68. 66. 40. Let's take some, you know, next number. B, 45. Bingo! B, 72. Bingo! Bingo! 72. Are you ready for this? How many disciples did Yeshua in Luke 10 send out two by two? Just go ahead and give up. And go ahead and say 72. Yeah, but the kingdom says 70. Okay. The King James says 70. The NIV, the nearly inspired version, says 72. Which one is right? Homework. You check it out. I've already done it. I already went to the Greek and read what it says in the Greek and then translated that directly to English. The number is 72. You mean that Yeshua, not 66, not 48, not 33, not 107, not 95, 72. He sent two by two. Why is Yeshua sending 72? Answer. I am the light of the world, he said. I'm a menorah. Ooh. I am a menorah. Boy, if you don't get that, you're just going to skid around the New Testament like when babies go to the bathroom and it runs out of there. And if you're not careful and you step on it, you're going to slide big time in some yellow stuff. I have experience. How many people are in the Sanhedrin? I heard that over here. 72, it is. You want me to read you? You say, no, it's 70. Whoa, hang on a second. Let me open the Jewish source here. 71 plus a Kohen Gadol representing God, which adds up 71 plus 1. Why 72? The same number as the prophets with Moses is the Sanhedrin. And the numbers are set up so that there's 71 regular representatives and only one Kohen Gadol, representing that that this is a God thing. So 72, random. How many do we have in the United States? How many senators? This is not a really hard question. There are two senators per state. How many states? Puerto Rico's hoping to be 51. Haven't happened. Still 50. So how many senators? Random. 100. Random. Do we just think it all random? And it's not. There's nothing random about it. Finally, I think that we by faith are one of those menorot. Menorot is plural for menorah. By faith, we are one of those menorahs in the book of Revelation. Of course, if I want to ask, which one do you want to be? Do you want to be Ephesus? Do you want to be Philadelphia? God forbid. You know, I'm going to use biblical statements here. You want to be Laodicea? What do you want to be? You're one of them. We're going to pick the best one, huh? Aren't we? Who's going to pick Laodicea? You go ahead and stand up because everybody's going to go boo. That's the lukewarm folks. By the way, not all seven were bad. Ephesus wasn't bad. Was there another one that wasn't bad? Going once? Going twice? Let the rocks cry out. Tell me, Stephen, you probably know. Philadelphia. Really? Don't tell my son's wife's family. They're from Philadelphia. They'll drive me crazy. Adonai has commanded us to be lit with Holy Spirit oil continually so that we can keep his menorah congregational light burning forever. That's how we become the light of the world. That means that inside of us there's got to be these patterns of 7, 12, 72, etc., 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 like the King of Siam, etc., etc. That was Yul Brynner, right? Well, remember? We had to like him in the King of, and I, King of Siam, we were like really upset with him when he was Pharaoh. And the big disappointment is that Pharaoh doesn't die. As a kid, I go, he got to live. That scoundrel is over there, and all the troops are going. They're going to get killed. And he's sitting over there watching from the side. And I didn't like Yul Brynner. Then my sister said, you got to watch the King and I. You got to watch the King and I. You want him. They made me watch the King and I. I go, this is this guy. That's the guy. Thus it shall be written. Thus it shall be, you know, like, wow, my God, this guy. And now he's the King of Siam, and he waltzes and everything. And my sisters are all about it. And I'm like, get me out of here. There's no testosterone in this room. There's nothing. This is not for guys. I don't want to see this guy dance. I want to see him fight. I want to see him take on Charlton Heston and lose. That's what I want to see, right? Okay, I'm done. What we need to do, you and I, is to develop a burning heart for Adonai and his Messiah this year. And out of the desire of the heart, not compelled by man, but like it says here, a voluntary situation coming from a compelling heart. If we do that, we will fulfill the calling of the menorah congregation of Gainesville. Do you think so? I know so. Shabbat shalom.